Hi, this is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. There's no doubt that 2020 has been a tough year and one that's been particularly difficult for Latin America. The IMF projects that while the global economy will see GDP shrink by 4.4% this year, Latin America will get hit with an 8% contraction. But that doesn't mean the region has to face another lost decade. ASCOA was fortunate to be joined for an event by IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva, who spoke with our President and CEO, Susan Siegel, about not just the hurdles Latin America has to overcome, but opportunities for the future. If you'd like to see the video of the full virtual event, visit as-coa.org/IMF Americas. Also, Susan Siegel is the host of the podcast Experiencias, featuring conversations with women leading the Americas. You can find it on all major podcast platforms. Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
Podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Of course, the managing director needs no introduction, but I would like to say a few words about her career. Before joining the fund, she was the CEO of the World Bank from January 2017 to September 2019. During which time she served as interim president of the World Bank Group for 3 months. Previously, she helped shape the agenda of the European Union while serving as European Commission Vice President for Budget and Human Resources. She began her career in public service at the World Bank as an environmental economist in 1993. After serving for 17 years in many senior positions, her career culminated in her appointment as Vice President and Corporate Secretary in 2008. In this role, she served as the interlocutor between the World Bank senior management, its boards of directors, and shareholder countries. She was the first woman CEO of the World Bank. She is the first managing director from an Eastern European country, Bulgaria, and from an emerging market. She is the second woman to become managing director of the IMF. She oversees $1 trillion, the amount the IMF is able to lend member countries, and she oversees 2,700 staff from more than 140 countries. More importantly, the managing director is a role model for so many young women around the world. It's an honor to engage in this dialogue, Madam Managing Director, with you today. So let's begin. It would be so interesting for us if you could tell us a little bit about how you're seeing the impact of COVID-19 on the economies of Latin America.
Well, thank you very much for this very kind introduction. This is the first truly global crisis we are experiencing, and it has created tremendous suffering because it is a combination of a health crisis and an economic crisis, the health crisis induced. Unfortunately, for Latin America, the region is particularly hard hit. And let me just go through the numbers and then the reasons why these numbers. In terms of the pandemic itself, as many know, Latin America has 8% of the global population, but sadly, 20% of infections, 30% of deaths. Life lost are exceeding 460,000, and we are not yet seeing the end of the pandemic. The other side of the crisis, the economic side, not surprisingly, given the health hit, is also quite dramatic. We are projecting for 2020 the world economy to shrink by 4.4%. Emerging markets by 3.3%. Latin America by 8%. Let's see where we come at the end of the year, but these are staggering numbers. And even more troubling is that when we look forward in 2021, we project the world to grow by 5.2%, emerging markets by 6%, Latin America by 3.6%. So these numbers tell a story that it is more severely hit and it would have harder time to come out of the crisis. And the question is, why? There are, of course, different answers for different countries and categories of countries. But what is common across Latin America is three overwhelming reasons. The first one is that the region has been growing somewhat slower in years before. In the 90s, Latin America had income per capita at 25% of the US. Emerging Asia had 5%. So Latin America was many times better. Today, emerging Asia is coming to almost 20%. Latin America is still at 25%. So somehow this momentum of growth has not materialized. And we can talk later about what can be done about it. Second, so many of the workers in Latin America are in contact-dependent industries, actually 45% versus 30% globally. And if you think of the fate of the island economies, the Caribbean, they were just so hammered by the pandemic, where income depends on tourism between 50 and 90%. So this contact dependency, of course, played a role. And three, sadly, what we have seen is that underinvestment in people makes the situation tougher. The fact that health systems have been overwhelmed, that tells us that we have to do better in the future. Now, I want to give credit where credit is due in Latin America, and it has been the decisiveness for policy action to protect economies from even worse outcome. Latin American governments have deployed monetary policy measures, central banks have cut interest rates, and finance authorities have put in place the equivalent of 8% of GDP in measures, of which 4.5% of GDP are very direct measures like boosting expenditures or reducing tax collection, reducing revenues. What we are also seeing in Latin America is that there is a recognition that the crisis is an opportunity. We can do better for the future. And I very much welcome this dynamic thinking in the region. What can be done so we can come on the other side in better shape than we entered the crisis?
So you talked a little bit about the slower growth, but clearly there are structural and policy reasons why Latin American countries have experienced COVID differently, but also why they haven't grown. I mean, your comparison of Asia, that's structural, no?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what are some of those reasons?
Let me first say that Latin America is a very diverse region. So one size of policy description doesn't fit all countries. But what we have seen in Latin America over the last decades is indeed a less of a concentration on productivity, on the most important asset for growth in the future, and it is human capital. Educational attainments could be better. Conditions for private sector growth could be better. there is still quite a lot that can be done to eliminate obstacles for private sector-led growth, for dynamism. And something that is kind of a half glass, half full, half empty, the problems of inequality. Latin America has improved. So let's say that it is better than it used to be, but it is still the most unequal region. Why does that matter? Of course, it matters from an equality standpoint, but it also matters from a growth standpoint. Inequality of opportunity means that part of society is just not reaching its full potential. That is bad for people. It is bad for the economy as a whole. And what is particularly important to rethink today is how could that be changed? What can be done? So we are addressing these structural impediments to growth. And finally, something that I'm sure you have been discussed many times, integration in the region. At the level of the region, at the level of sub-regions, there is so much more that can be done to benefit growth just by building stronger links between economies that can perform at a higher level on that basis. If you look at my country, Bulgaria, in Eastern Europe, what is the biggest boost for Bulgaria? Being part of the European Union. So you have 420 million still, with UK still part of it. You have a large economy that offers so many more opportunities, goods travel, people travel, opportunities are grabbed in a more effective way. And that is particularly important for the young people of Latin America. It's a youthful region. It can do so much better by tapping in the talent of entrepreneurship. We saw, and I would finish with this because this is probably the one silver lining on our COVID cloud. We saw the winner of this crisis, digital. The digital transformation made it so clear that those that are high skilled can do well. Those that are low skilled, that are excluded from the digital economy, they suffer. And if you look at labor market outcomes today, they are telling us that we have to be very watchful for what is the shape of the recovery. Why? Because labor market outcomes demonstrate high skilled here, low skilled workers, women, young people, very negatively impacted. So we will have all kinds of letters in this recovery soon. But one letter to be watchful of, especially in a region with deep roots of inequality, is a K-shaped recovery. One part of the economy recovers, does wonderfully, and another part stagnates and falls further behind. And that is only fixed with structural policies.
And as we were talking before, education is one of the most important areas that accentuates the people or the young people that don't have the skills and don't have the resources.
Yeah, you have the issue of skills. You want more investment in human capital. You have the issue of entrepreneurship, not only access to digital, but financial inclusion, ability for entrepreneurs to step up, men and women. And you have the issue of eliminating barriers for integration. You attack these three obstacles, you come on the other side better. And boy, do we need it with the climate crisis hanging over our heads.
Absolutely. Since we last spoke with the IMF, there have been U.S. elections. And so do you see that there is an opportunity for the U.S. and Latin American countries to really have more economic cooperation and therefore be able to help Latin America with their recovery?
Certainly, the U.S. economy is very important for Latin America. 45% of exports from Latin America go to the United States. 40% of investments in Latin America come from the United States. And especially for countries that depend on remittances, a well-performing U.S. economy is really great news. What we see is a fairly ambitious plan for the recovery in the U.S. Tackling the pandemic, which is the biggest obstacle to recovery. This is number one policy priority everywhere. Two, focusing on a stimulus, especially one that can create better infrastructure for growth. And three, a commitment to climate action, which means jobs in the green economy and boosting growth through this policy actions. And then a special attention to Central America. Already a $4 billion plan is being announced to help Central America address poverty, do better for people there. So, if we are to see the U.S. economy coming out of the pandemic with more employment and growth, that is good for Latin America. Also, what is good for Latin America is a recognition that global value chains have to be more diverse. And of course, proximity of Latin America to the U.S. Helps Latin America's case. And for a region where big chunk is at high risk of climate change, a renewed commitment to climate action, all those are going to be helpful policy directions.
People talk about nearshoring. Do you see that as a huge opportunity for Latin America?
There would be some of it, yes. And this is why I'm saying that proximity works for Latin America in that regard. How much and in which sectors is to be seen, because we also have to recognize that digitalization leads to exact opposite. Work can be done anywhere at any time. When you take the service part that is within the digital economy. But that means that Latin America has to walk on two legs. One is make yourself more attractive by creating better conditions for entrepreneurship and investment, more qualified labor that can be tapped into on one side. And on the other side, make sure that the region becomes more digital. So nearshoring, being in the same time zone, in the digital world, can also be an advantage for Latin America.
So you've touched on this, but one of the things that concerns me so much is how we prevent another lost decade in Latin America. I lived through the lost decade of the 80s and the 90s. So what's your perspective on that?
It need not happen. It is... So I will give you my more optimistic view of the world. And with full disclosure, when you run an organization that is a first responder in crisis, when crisis is pretty much what you zero on, you have to be optimistic. What I want to start from is the global financial crisis. So it hit very... severely, primarily advanced economies. But as a result of this crisis, everywhere in advanced economies, in emerging markets, even in big parts of the low-income countries, there has been resilience built in the banking system. So the financial system today is much stronger. The question for all of us, and for Latin America in particular, is will the region embrace building resilience so it can withstand shocks to come? And shocks will come. In other words, will this sober moment, a tragedy that affects virtually all of us, translate into investing in resilience of people, education, health, social protection? By the way, the region has done quite a lot on social protection, and you know that should be recognized. Resilient planet. So much of Latin America depends on improvements in land management, coastal zone management, taking advantage of the richness of nature for well-being and actually also for growth for the future, and more resilient economies where buffers are being built, fiscal buffers are built, macro foundation of the economy is strong. Will this be done? And if it is done, if there is a push for greener, digital, and more inclusive future for the region, where problems of governance are also sorted out, problems of kind of taking care of different interest groups from a political perspective of the short term, not the long term growth perspective, that can be a great outcome. I lived, and I would finish with this because there is nothing like personal experience to make you believe in opportunities. I lived through times when my own country was on the verge of collapse. We had hyperinflation, unproductive sectors of the economy, a population losing hope in itself, in its future, mid-90s. And then building fundamentals, opening up space for a private sector, integrating in the European Union, made Bulgaria much, much better off, four times better off to be exact. Still problems to be solved, and mostly problems on the government side, rule of law in that area. But if a crisis is to serve the future, it should be to shake us up. And what we thought was impossible to become possible and then done.
I share your optimism. I hope that we can all take amazing learnings from this experience and turn it into much more aggressive global growth. You touched on something which I think is really important, which is informality. And one of the reasons that Latin America, I think, has been hit so hard is there's such a high level of informality and inequality. How do we impact the informal economy and bring people into the mainstream?
The answer is not easy. If it was easy, it would have been done everywhere. But if you look at countries that have been more successful in integrating the informal economy into the formal economy, they share three common features. One, they put in place strong institutions that are trusted, in many cases, on e-platforms. E-governments have the advantage that the public can see how is money collected, from whom, how is money spent. Secondly, they have the a tax system that is fair, more progressive. So if you're doing very well, you share this with those down, which allows the third component, which is to create opportunities for everyone and then turn these opportunities into integration in the formal economy. You have to collect taxes. One of the reasons people stay out of the formal economy is to avoid paying paying taxes. Well, there has to be strong system of including everybody for good and for bad. So when you need help, you can be helped through strong social safety nets. And that is actually, sorry, I should have said that in the very beginning. Strong social, strong, vibrant social safety nets also help with informality. The more countries think of a vibrant, inclusive economy being their future and able to counter pressures from vested interests, the faster this transformation can take place.
Thank you very much. And please be healthy, be safe. A very happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissas. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Gonzalez. The music in this podcast was recorded at our headquarters in New York City. For more about concerts online, visit musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can help us spread the word. Write us a review, give us 5 stars, share, and subscribe at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.